Goodness gracious, folks. Yeah, that's right, folks. I'm here. And I got company tonight. You'll be hearing from him pretty soon. Yes, that's right. If you got my email, if you didn't, Angry Sam is in the studio. And we're very happy to have him. Yeah, you know, dang, studio monitors are working better than the earphones. So there you go. Anyway, okay, for those who are uninitiated, this here is the Hacienda. My name is Boy Howdy, and I'm so happy to have you here. Like I said, we got Angry Sam in the house. He's going to be reading for us some stuff that he wrote. And I believe it's his novel, yes? He's reading from his novel. So it's a novel called Nada. So he'll be reading Nada here pretty soon. Tonight, I'm just not going to be paying attention. Basically not going to be telling you what I'm playing so that we can leave as much time as possible for Angry Sam. We'll have some music in between his readings so that he's got a chance to quench his thirst, to quaff, to readjust, to enjoy his tall boy. Anyway, but I will tell you that I started the set off again. I played it this last week, played it this week. This band, Augie March from Australia. You just can't find this in record stores in the U.S., which is a shame. The song, Just Passing Through. Yeah, in the background, we're listening to Chatham County Line doing Company Blues. We're going to roll this and then one more song, and then we're going to be listening to Angry Sam. So stay tuned and do what you do to get yourself together for Tuesday night here on the Hacienda, killradio.org.
Thanks a lot for having me in here tonight, and I just want to get a quick hello to all the grips with Local IA 80 that are listening to me tonight in the production office instead of working. All right, here's one of my cuts from the novel called Nada. Sometimes it's easy to be broke, economically, emotionally, morally. There's nothing to lose. You're either alive or dead. Everything else simply becomes window dressing. Strip away all the crap obscuring the pure essence of existence and expose the bare, naked truth. Life is nothing more than a word. Just like baloney is a word. Some may object to its poor nutritional value. Some may hate its taste. Others may love it. But nobody questions its meaning. Baloney is food. Take it or leave it. Once you remove all the abstracted tangibles of a word, you remove all fear. Our Father, who art in heaven, my baloney has a first name. During my freshman year in college, I was still going to church. Pittsburgh Diocese made it easy, offering a Saturday evening pre-hangover mass for university students. I usually went with my Jewish roommate, Pillhead Ned, whenever he was coherent enough to walk. Pillhead was a scrawny, blue buzz-cut freak of nature pursuing a major in sociology and an amateur minor in pharmacology. Ned lived in his own self-prescribed reality, an artificial atmosphere, a free-flowing surreal syrup. Sunrise and sunset had no effect on Ned's eternal clock. His schedule was governed by pill color and dosage, which constantly shifted due to increasing tolerance and arbitrary strength of street scores. One time he took too many blues and passed out cold. For 3 days I was constantly holding the mirror up to his mouth, checking for breath. When he finally regained consciousness, Pillhead popped a handful of black beauties and vowed to get his shit together. After a month of modifying his drug use, Ned started eating solid food, stopped surfing dorm elevators at 4 a.m., and went to a few classes. They weren't his classes, but we decided to celebrate anyway. I wanted to hit Palco's Pub. It was so campus close, blind drunk remote control could stumble me safely home. I didn't get carded because I once scored the bouncer a vial of liquid sunshine LSD-25. But Ned craved somewhere new, not the same old incest frat jock crowd. We hiked far off the beaten collegiate path deep into tough pit bull Pittsburgh. Ned zigzagged us through an urban maze of brown brick buildings adorned with barbed wire billboards selling old English malt liquor. Bright city lights dimmed in the shadow burial grounds for asthmatic Ford LTDs dying a slow, rusty cancer death. Solid sidewalk slabs heaved and cracked from bony tree root fingers clawing for life. Bang! A car backfired. Adrenaline spiked my senses. Broken beer bottle glass crunched like teeth beneath my boots as we approached the Dewdrop Inn. Across from the bar, there was a 400-pound drunk standing shirtless on the Gold Eagle hood of a Trans Am, cutting the car's roof off with a chainsaw. Metal sparks were spraying against his white blob gut like a kamikaze firefly dive-bombing an albino pig. The bastard spotted us when he stopped to adjust safety goggles strapped around his Charlie Brown pumpkin head. His rabbit chainsaw growled a bluish gas slobber. A vein in his meat neck began to throb. I wanted to run, fast, all the way back to Palco's Pub. Instead, I froze. Peer pressure, fear of looking uncool, trumped the bloody terror of power tool decapitation. Ned, goddamn Ned, reached into his thrift store trench coat and pulled out, not a gun, not a knife, but a joint. He smiled serene and said, "Here you go, man." The sweaty son of Leatherface paused, dug for belly button lint and jumped off the car, hitting the asphalt with the force of a flesh earthquake, concrete jello. I couldn't believe his knees didn't buckle, snap upon impact. It was a damn miracle, or my bad luck, or Ned's pre-written fate, or some kind of cosmic karma crap. Red-hot seething gripped me. I glared at Ned with a self-righteous desire to administer blame as the killer walked toward us. I needed Ned to take responsibility, to confess, beg, asshole, beg forgiveness from my shocked mother and betrayed father trying to decipher the police report. Two college students, a pill addict Jew and a repressed Catholic, were carved into tiny pieces when a dope deal went bad outside a seedy bar. What a waste. To end up a victim, to allow it to happen, to do nothing to escape, to fight, to save my life, to just stare at Ned with contempt, losing valuable time, tick, tick, ticking away. I shook as a sensation of freezing cold heat surged through me, left my body and rose into the air. Suddenly I found myself, my spirit, floating, looking down on my earthbound physical form, standing, breathing next to Ned. Without hesitation, I knew this separation of body and being wasn't a drug-induced hallucination or a dream. No doubt, no surprise, no miracle. It felt organic, a natural response like crying or laughing, but more profound. From my aerial perspective, I had an unbiased voyeur's view of three men intersecting on a Pittsburgh street. I saw that everything traveled a unique path, influenced by internal forces and external events. We existed in a universe of infinite bumper car possibilities. Bang! Life was a line of dominoes set up one by one. Our birth was the first domino, our destiny the last. Reality was a joke. Reality was a playground to third graders trying to describe a white fluffy cloud. Everybody sees what they want to see.
Work my life away. a poor man standing in a line, working life is hard, but it buys a man his dinner. They gotta get to work, gotta make their own time, gotta get to work before the baby starts to cry. How long is this life of mine? How long is this life of mine?
Again, boy howdy. It's good to be back here at killradio.org. I wasn't here for a while. I was detained down in Guantanamo Bay for writing a letter to the LA Times, being a little critical of King George. Well, now I'm back, now I'm free, and I'm good to be here to be reading yet another cut. Now, here you go. The dew drop in was a squat local dive, dank with blue collar brick in a Patsy Cline jukebox, Pittsburgh's flannel proletariat, unemployed steelworkers, no bouncer needed. Ned and I entered and were met by a loud alcohol roar. I immediately started scanning the crowd for a safe spot to blend in before narcotic paranoia ruined my mellow skunkweed buzz. Being stoned in a new place always amplified insecurities and magnified guilt. Strangers had a way of developing x-ray eyes, powerful enough to judge my every move. Ned remained his usual casual, calm self. Ned was Ned, nothing to hide, no reason to worry. He understood the art of drug zen maintenance. I understood the need to rehearse my fake driver's license details a little more. My name is Marky Matthews, E for Ethan, 1202 8th Avenue, Detroit, Michigan, 61557, Gemini, 22 years old. Good, good. That was good, except for one thing. What? Zip code. You forgot the damn zip code. Okay, let's start over. My name is Marky Matthews. Shut up. We got bigger problems. What? Ned just walked into the bathroom. Oh, man. That's not good. It looks shady, like we got something to hide. Funny thing, perception. A nervous man with idle hands aroused suspicion. People wondered why he was standing by himself, what he was up to, and why he couldn't be trusted. But a man smoking a cigarette appeared busy. He had an obvious agenda. He was enjoying a good smoke, so I lit a cigarette for camouflage. I used his cigarette smoke screen to survive a summer job working on a paving crew with old Pennsylvania Dutchmen. Decades of hard physical labor and harder boozing left them with beer barrel torsos and toothpick legs. They were a stubborn, salt-of-the-earth breed of American buffalo raised on red meat, whiskey, and unfiltered camels. During rain delays, they'd visit past job sites to see if the water was draining properly. Inspecting acres of blacktop for puddles wasn't company policy. It was for the crew's pride. Immense personal pride. They were never going to be rich. They were never going to be famous. They were who they were, and that was goddamn fine with them. Nobody in the world paved the road better than they did. Laying asphalt in harsh summer heat, boiled temperatures so severe, the soles of my cheap work boots melted in 2 days. The Dutchmen used to bet which new labor would drop first. To cheat a few minutes off the clock, they'd gamble on anything. The next type of roadkill they'd find, the next day it was gonna rain, the next time I'd get a haircut. They also love shouting abuse at joggers. Hey, Twinkle Toes, them running shorts get any tighter, they'll cut the circulation off to your pecker. Look, it's Bruce Jenner. Hey, Bruce, the Olympics was last year. Yo, man, why you running in this heat? Car breakdown, can't afford the bus? Come over here, we got a job for your skinny ass. The post-70s health craze was a bigger joke to my coworkers than the Japs trying to sell pickup trucks in America. Why pay a gym to lift heavy shit when you can get paid to operate a jackhammer? Why buy bottled water when tap water was free? And why the hell would anybody drink light beer? The only carbs they cared about were in car engines. These Dutchmen were pure and true old-school mother lovers. I was a soft suburban kid trying to make bank before splitting for college. Didn't take a genius to realize I had made a horrible mistake. I didn't belong with them. All of my friends were at the shore chugging cheap beer, screwing anything with the pussy, and I wanted to quit, but there was no easy way to tell my dad I couldn't hack a little hard work and then ask him for cash to go to Wildwood and drink until passing out in a puddle of my own puke after knocking up some chick from Iowa. For Dad, my father was cool. He wasn't brain dead. After a punishing week of manual labor, my hands had so many blisters I could hardly hold a shovel. Every morning in the crew van, our dumper man, Barry the Vietnam vet, would offer me gloves. I'd always refuse, trying to fit in, pretending to act macho tough. In reality, I was whimpering like a baby to go home, to crawl into bed, to have Mom wrap my hands in soft bandages and feed me grilled cheese sandwiches cut diagonally the way I liked them. The longer I defied Barry, the more he taunted me, asking me why a college boy needed calloused hands, warning me that the crew was tired of covering for my lame ass. Later, I found out why Barry was riding me so hard. He had bet that I'd puss out and was losing major money to Elmer Zook, the oldest guy on the crew. Elmer was a crusty bear of a man, a mix of Norman Mailer and Grizzly Adams. At 17, he earned a Purple Heart storm in Omaha Beach. At 60, he gambled on me surviving Hell Month. To protect his wager, he took me under his wing and showed me the right way to shovel asphalt, swing a sledgehammer, and push his wheelbarrow. Elmer's best advice was how to sneak an unscheduled break without getting fired. Light up a cigarette. It never failed. The foreman didn't see a weak slacker in need of immediate paramedic triage. he saw an employee addicted to nicotine.
Oh, she's not here, she had to go. I don't know why. Until they say goodbye. But I never think of you. It's just tonight. I call you up, but you're not there. They said you called the train to God knows where. Just tonight, just
back to me. Call what you don't want charity. The color of my skin, coincidence. I guess I'm just a ghost again.
Steven pulled that up. It's called Mean Red Spiders. My God, they were that
Who
was.
Who the hell is Steven?
Who?
Who the hell is Steven?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm all. There's a guy in the back named Steven working for Boy Howdy who gets my anti-slur filter. He puts it in there so the MP3s sound good once we're done. All right, this is my last cut, third cut of the night from a book called Nada. And here we go. Even though a huge bust in Monroeville dried up most of Pittsburgh, forcing a city of potheads to scrape bong resin for one last hit, Ned was sitting high on 3 ounces of quality skunk. In less than a week, the value of Ned's stash tripled. Just like America's Puritan alcohol prohibition, Reagan's war on drugs was perverting prices and escalating minor dealers in the Al Capone kingpins. A quarter bag of dirtweed shake worth $20 started going for $50. Street scum hanging outside the Dirty O were selling an eighth of oregano laced with PCP for $25. Ned's killer new connection was an Ivy League Izod white boy named Tom Eugene Ball III. Tom dropped out of law school to get rich quick, running hay bales of skunk from Miami to New York. A powerful gang of Brooklyn Jamaicans was paying Wonder Bread cracker mules to hump drugs up I-95 in four-door family sedans, invisible to local cops and state troopers. Whenever Tom made a delivery to Ned at our Shadyside slumlord apartment, he'd break out a bottle of mezcal and a solid eight-ball rock of pink Peruvian coke. We'd get ripped as Tom babbled outrageous jaw-grinding drug stories. Oh, yeah. Hang on a minute. Did I ever tell you about the time when I escaped certain death in the bathroom of a Adams Morgan reggae club? Chop, chop, chop. I was taking a piss when this coked-up rude boy came up behind me, pressed a gun against my head, and threatened to shoot me for being white. Snort, snort. Without missing a beat, I spun around and here. Okay, here's the crazy part. I didn't zip up, right? There I am with my dick hanging out in front of this guy holding the gun in my face, and he's the one who's freaking out. So anyway, before he recovers to pull the trigger or anything, I get all up in his face and say, mellow out, bro. Nobody messing with me in D.C. I'm the personal crack dealer for Mayor Marion Barry. The more I partied with Tom, the more he reminded me of that one sadistic neighborhood kid who got off torturing animals. Tom loved bragging way too much, like the time he took off his shirt to reveal a series of nasty rope burns running across his chest. So he starts it out, the story goes, I got these last week down in Miami waiting to pick up 5 keys of smoke and a couple bricks of blow, Tom said, beaming with pride. To kill some time, I hooked up with this nympho chick at South Beach Nightclub, went back to her place to party and do the do. After bouncing her off the headboard for a few hours, I was still too wired to crash. So, you know, I got up to watch TV and then swear to God, bang! Somebody crushes in my skull and knocks me out cold. When I came to, I was hogtied to this chair surrounded by militant Nicaraguans armed with M14s. They said they were Sandinistas and that they were at war and I was their prisoner. The way they saw it, I worked for the Jamaicans, who were being supplied by a bunch of expat Cubans, who were buying direct from a covert branch of CIA spooks. According to the Sandinistas, Tom explained, dead serious, these rogue CIA black ops were trading U.S. arms for drugs in Honduras, smuggling dope into America on military transports, selling it to old Air America contacts from Vietnam, laundering the cash through General Noriega in Panama, and using the profits to support an illegal army of Contras fighting to overthrow the Nicaraguan government. Tom paused for a moment, pulled hard on a safety pin, punk pierced through an earlobe, and then continued. The only reason I didn't end up in the Glades as gator bait was because I started ranting and raving against our government like Abby Hoffman having a Chicago 7 flashback. I condemned Ronnie Reagan and CIA Director George Bush as evil goose-stepping spawns of Satan. I swore allegiance to the Sandinistas and graciously offered to donate the $30,000 I had my rental car to their crusade. After licking coke residue off the edge of a razor blade, Tom shrugged and said, well, trafficking in major quantities of narcotics sure creates strange bedfellows. Yeah, I mumbled. I couldn't laugh as pretzel logic and naive confusion arm wrestled my brain for control. After all, it wasn't easy for me to accept Tom's grim fairy tale as fact. I was a baby boomer boy, born and bred inside a plastic bubble, protected from the outside world by the suburban security of white picket fence Camelot, taught to respect the middle-class coat of arms, a two-story castle built on a half-acre lot draped by a banner that read, "Don't rock the boat, kid. Other kids in India are starving." When Colonel Oliver North was caught trading arms to raise illicit funds for the Contras, I went on a 5-day drinking binge, trying to erase the truth. Ronald Reagan, George Bush, and all the president's men were guilty of using the Constitution as toilet paper to wipe their fat, fascist assholes in order to fund a terrorist organization. Ned finally found me in a Bloomfield movie theater watching Dr. Strangelove, chanting, "Santa Claus begins bombing in 5 minutes."
He's got a Mach 173 Ford Mustang.
Yeah. Get must until this phony Beatlemania has been addressed. It's alright. The sublimation hour. I guess the streets will suffice till everybody makes nice, but there's a rumor going around even destroyers have a price.
Heart of gold with the ways of a gentleman, I've been told, the kind of a feller that wouldn't even harm a flea. But if me and a certain character met,
yeah, Angry Sam's over here chuckling a little bit, I think, because he can sort of relate to this song.
I don't smoke myself, and I don't reckon they hinder your health.
Yeah, I can. In fact, I did background vocals on this.
But nicotine are all the same at a petting party or a poker game.
Hey, what? Where's the petting party? That's what I want to know.
In my past.
Where's? And, yeah, I'm going to have to, like, get a rain check on that one. Hey, folks, listen, it's coming to the end of another Hacienda here. And, yeah, desfortunately, there's no sight nor sound of Coinsine, of the folks from Coinsine. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I spin something, play something, and then put on some archives, whatever. But, hey, I want to thank you all for tuning in. I want to thank Angry Sam for stopping in and sharing his novel with us.
Thanks to our Till Radio and Cowboy Howdy once again, man. It's always great to be here. And I hope to come back soon unless the emails are too negative. Then I'll come back sooner.
Yeah, well, I think you're counting on, as they say, I think you can count on all the emails I get about this show on neither hand. So anyway, this tune's going to run out. Like I said, I'm not going to tell you everything I played. And if you want to, email me, boyhowdy@killradio.org. And, you know, I'll try to remember. And this show should be, get off my ass and get it cut up and get it put together again and take care of all those problems we were having with the line and the CD player and fix that and get this back up on Radio for All and look for it on the archive on killradio.org. And then you can check that out. You can also look at it's old, but maybe it'll be there. The hacienda.blogspot.com, something like that. Anyway, 23 seconds. That means I got to get going, folks. So y'all have a great rest of the Tuesday evening. Keep listening to killradio.org.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hates to make him wait. You've got to have another cigarette.